Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Miss Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Hello, 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 everyone. This is Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we are proud to bring you Living by Design, week 4 of our 12-week series entitled Review, Renew, and Reclaim Your Life. We have had some outstanding guests over the last few weeks, and we continue tonight with two very powerful guests, and we're very excited to have them. But before we get to that, I just want to make a few brief announcements, and the very first thing I want to start off the show with is to acknowledge the month of October being Breast Cancer and Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And we know these are two very important areas that has caused a lot of trauma in the lives of so many women. And we want to give a very proud, peaceful acknowledgement to the previous victims who have had to deal with that trauma and drama in their lives. And we are also going to be hosting an event on October the 31st of this month entitled Motherhood, Money, and Men, and it's going to be held at the Julia Carson Center on Fall Creek Parkway in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we are looking to sponsor a few of the tickets for that event for a few breast cancer and domestic violence victims who have overcome that trauma, and just to celebrate their lives and give them an opportunity to attend a very uplifting and motivating and empowering event. And so we're very excited about that. Tony, is the station, your WTLC station, doing anything for Breast Cancer or Domestic Violence Awareness Month?
Well, I know we, throughout the month of October, are taking a look at doing some outreach programs for the awareness programs, both for breast cancer and domestic violence. So many times, so many people are affected, but people forget, you know, once a person is a survivor of domestic violence and or breast cancer, many of the family members are affected. So it's not just the person that was affected, but also the family. So a lot of times we do outreach and do programs that not only are working for those individuals who have been affected, but also the families and the survivors of the families. So or the families of the survivors. So we're going to be doing various activities. The station tries to do as much as they can to build awareness and get as many people in the community involved and understand how important it is for everyone to be a part of it.
You know, that's a very good point, Tony, because you never really think about the family members being traumatized. You know, you always just think of the victims themselves, but that is so very true, because the victim is going through a severe trauma in itself, but everyone around them is having to watch that and witness that, and so they're, in a sense, going through it with them. So that's a very good point. Yeah, so that's great. That's great. So I wanted to just make that announcement. So moving on with our first guest, we have two wonderful guests on tap for this evening, and our first guest is Dr. Bria McDonald. And Dr. Bria is a lifelong learner. She holds many, many, many titles, and she has her education level is just very extensive. But she has a BA, a MS, she's a PhD, she's a doctor, she's been a technology consultant with many Fortune 500 clients, a motivational speaker, and I know her profession right now. She is, of course, one of my joint venture partners, and that's why she is partnering with me to host this 12-week teleseries, because at the end of this teleseries, for you that are just now joining us, at the end of our series, which will be December the 10th, all of our guests that have been with me since September the 3rd, all of our guests are going to be offering a free gift to everyone who purchases a copy of Emotional Bailout. And these gifts are fabulous gifts valued somewhere in the neighborhood of $3,500 with all of my guests together. So that is going to be a great offering, and we want you guys to stick with us and hang in there, and you're going to have a fabulous set of resources to start your brand new life plan in 2010. So we are going to bring Dr. Bria on the line and speak with her. Dr.
Hello,
Bria,
Kathy.
Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. And we're so happy to have you with us this evening.
Well, I'm so glad to be here to talk to you both about technology and also about web safety.
Excellent. Yeah, we are very, very excited. So, Dr. Bria, just tell our listeners a little bit about your background and how you got started, and your bio is very extensive.
Well, I keep telling everybody that I'll let them know when I become a grown-up, because I keep learning. There's so much out there that I don't know that I just keep trying to learn things. I started off as a teacher, and a teacher of technology. And so I began in 83 as some of the first schools that had technology in them. I became a director of technology, a principal, and dean of college, and just have done lots of things in the educational arena around technology.
Interesting. Well, you and I share that. We share that industry, because I spent 28 years in the technology industry, and even though I did bring out a great foundation, it wasn't really my passion, but I learned quite a bit.
Well, it's been a wonderful ride to see how technology has changed from being a desktop technology to now being an internet technology.
That's
and
a good point.
It's sort of a double-edged sword. With all the great things that we can now do with our technology, we've also opened the door to a lot of internet crimes.
You know, that's true. That's a very good point.
Absolutely.
Now, tell our listeners a little bit about what you do, your company. It's EO Consulting. Am I pronouncing that right, EO?
It's EOHO Consulting, and it stands for Each One Help One. Because
I
was working with major corporations, and it seemed like the major initiative or drive was not to help the consumer. And sadly, it was to make money. And I really got to a point in my life where I wanted to use all the skills that I had with technology, all my education background, my writing background, to help small business owners and parents and other people just to find the tools that they need to be successful in their own personal life. So I created EOHO Consulting, and it is a web consulting company. We do web design and internet marketing, but we also do a lot of community service. We take some of our profits and we volunteer and give money to domestic violence issues, as well as health care for uninsured families, and also web safety, which is a new way for parents to help keep their kids safe with all of these technologies, not only on the internet, but also on their cell phone.
Oh, my goodness. You are really going to have to expand on that. That
sounds
well, now, I know one person that definitely wants to hear about it is my co-host. I know he's chomping at the bit waiting to hear it. Right, Tony?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I as you know, and Kathy knows this very well, that I pay a lot of attention to technology, but not only do I pay a lot of attention to technology, but how technology is growing and changing. And Kathy mentioned that because I have a 15-year-old daughter, and she stays on her phone, not only talking on the phone, but texting. And with all the things that are going on, her mom and I try to do our very best in putting together all the safeguards in place and the parental safeties and things like that to make sure. But technology is changing so much, and the young people are so on top of things. That's why I have to stay one step ahead of her in most cases. So, yeah, I am chomping at the bit to hear how things are going.
Well, I really want to introduce a new technology, and this technology was generated by the same fellow who actually offered the very first telephony system and major dialing system where you could actually talk to the phone and the phone would understand you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he has actually created software now where it will interpret what the children are seeing, hearing, and doing. Now, listen to me carefully, because we're talking about what they're texting on their cell phones. We're talking about where they're texting, if they're in their classrooms or if they're driving and texting. It knows that. It also can sense the language. It does what's called language interpretation, where it will target any cyberbullying that's going on, any sexting that's going on, any predator-type strings of text that are going on, as well as any signs of depression. You know, oftentimes kids will text to their friends, "I just want to kill myself." And the mother may not even know that the child's in crisis, or the father. So this is sort of a way to get a pulse on where your child is without having to literally sit with your child every second of the day. And so go ahead.
I'm sorry, Dr. Brett. I was just going to say, now, I know this is not a show about parenting, so I don't want to move too far in that direction. But so are you saying that, because it's been so long ago since I had to deal with teenagers, but are you saying that teenagers will hide that kind of stuff from their parents and let their parents think everything is okay, but they're really depressed to the point of doing something to hurt themselves?
Absolutely, absolutely. And even being bullied. They sometimes, girls or boys will get into relationships, and the teens will send them messages every 5 minutes, every second of the day, throughout the night. The kids can't sleep. They can't focus on their schoolwork. They can't function. And they're being bullied also by peers who want to say that they're ugly or they're fat or that they participate in certain activities when that may not be true. It's a whole new world of being anonymous. You know, used to be the bullies, if you could make it from your classroom door to your front door, you were safe. You remember those of us had to run home from school sometimes? Well, that's not true anymore. These kids can come in on the computer and harass you. They can come in on your cell phone and harass you. They can put things up on YouTube and the Internet and harass you. It's for all the great things that our technology can do, there's an equal amount of things they can do to harm us. And I just wanted to let everyone know, it's sort of like it came to my attention. I couldn't believe the technology. I tried out the technology, and it's called web safety. And
That's what I was just going to ask you. The name of it is web safety?
Yeah, web safety. You can go to websafety.com and / Dr. Bria, and you will see videos, you'll see messages, and so on. But, our technology is everywhere. I just recently got a new phone, and it does everything. It does the navigation, it does, calling, it does texting, it does emails, it does movies, TV on technology. So we really have jumped into almost the Star Wars-type technology, but we have to also have Star Wars-type protection.
No, Dr. Brio, I know when you're talking about, and it's websafety.com,
mm-hmm.
When you talk about that technology, I know parents have, and I say parents, I'm one of those parents that try to stay on top of technology because I want to make sure I'm ahead of my child, but a lot of parents are reluctant to get into it because they say, well, I'm not that savvy and it moves too fast every time something changes and I don't have time to keep up with it. What's your suggestion to those individuals? Because I try to encourage even, my colleagues who are as old as I am or a little older, I try to tell them all the time, look, you need to stay up on this stuff. You need to be in front of it. You need to learn as much as you can. When it changes, you need to change with it because that's where the world is going and that's how you stay on top of things. But particularly when you have children, it's imperative that you do that. So what's the suggestion you have for those parents out there that have a sense of reluctance to stay on top of it or stay engaged with the technology?
Yeah, that's a good point, Tony, because I have several family members that are in that position, so that's a great question.
You know what Malcolm S. X said, by any means necessary. And let me tell you why I choose that statement. Because the last thing a parent wants to do is stand at the foot of a bed or a coffin and say, I wish I woulda, coulda, should've. And I'm saying that from personal experience. I had a daughter who felt unsafe to technology. And we discovered it when she was in the hospital. And it was only after she came out of her coma that we were able to say, what happened? Where did we drop the ball? You see, 9 years ago, the technology was really moving fast, and we had no idea who was on the web and who was out there talking to our child, either the telephone or the internet, and we were helpless. Our hands were tied. But I'm really attached to this particular project because had I been able to read her emails, the ones that had these crisis words in it, because it doesn't show you every email. It sends you a notification if something dangerous happens or some dangerous language is being used.
Trigger words.
It scans it. It understands what are those target words that a predator might use. What are those target words in a sentence? What is that net lingo that they might be using to talk about sex or talk about bullies or talk about crisis? And it will send you a text real time telling you there's a problem. You see, for 9 months there was a problem, and we had no idea that an event had taken place. And it was only when she was in the hospital, or we call the ambulance the hospital, that we realized that our daughter had been in crisis for 9 months. Now, it cost us over $100,000, and we have not recovered fully. We're talking about psychologists, medical bills. We're talking about loss of wages. We're talking about loss of life in terms of what her life would have been had she not fallen bullied to these victims, to these people. And so I say to parents who say, I don't have time, if I could go back 9 years ago and I could spend $200 and get this information, I would give anything. This is code blue, all hands on deck. There's statistics out there to say that every single child, 100% of children, will come across a predator online. Now, not 100% will fall victim to them because the predators are grooming and are searching for those who are the most vulnerable. But 100% of all children between the ages of 12 and 18 will have a conversation with a sexual predator online. And if you say that, I don't know what my children are doing, I don't know how to get involved, then you need to ask questions. Because I'm here to tell you, you do not want to sit at the foot of your daughter's bed while she's in a coma singing songs to her.
I'm scared.
All right.
That's not where you want to be.
Dr. Bria, let me see, I was getting ready to ask you a question. You really threw me off when you said that.
I'm sorry.
That's
I don't mean
okay.
to,
no, no.
I don't mean
I
to
mean,
be
I,
dramatic, but this is
no, no,
to,
no,
you
that's
to ring the gong.
No, call it like it is. I know what I want to ask you. When you was talking about this application recognizes trigger words and it notifies the parent for trigger words, does it recognize their special language? Because
yes.
You know, teenagers have this.
They have a net lingo, absolutely.
They have a special, and they don't spell out the words. They may abbreviate it. Does it recognize those abbreviated words as triggers?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, they are building a national database of those trigger words. The founders of this software are also working with the child pornography, the child predator people in Washington, D.C., and they're looking for those common strings of text. They're looking for those netlingo.com for those parents who haven't been there before. There's an entire database there that's being updated daily of the different net lingo that's out there. And so parents need to become, even if they don't buy the software, they need to go to NetLingo, and they need to look at their children's cell phone every now and then. They need to look at the patterns of how often they're being called, you know, because it can be abusive and disorienting for someone to call, you know, every 5 minutes. Kids can't finish a sentence. They can't watch a television show. They can't do homework. They can't do anything because that is going off. This particular software can actually turn off the texting capability for certain periods of the day. It can even monitor where they are. So if your child doesn't come home at 11:30, which is their curfew or whatever time it is, you can actually look at the GPS and see where they are. You know, if you said your child's going to go over to Aunt Susan's house and you just want to check to see if they're Aunt Susan's house without calling and letting them know, you can look at the service and it'll tell you where your kids are within a 5-mile radius. So what am I saying? I'm really saying that we all need to be proactive. Because the people who are doing the bad things, they are methodical, and they are proactive, and they are on a high. They're on a high because it's like stealing candy from a baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because there's nothing, most people are saying, well, somebody, that's someone else's problem. Somebody else will take care of it for me. That'll never happen to my kid.
That's right.
But that's not true.
Now let me ask you this question. Are there any that you are aware of, just from your own personal experience or just from, you know, your business experience, is there any specific patterns of behavior, maybe some type of mood changes in school habits or anything at home that we could, or that parents need to be aware of, to pay attention to?
Absolutely, absolutely. As you know, each of our children are distinctively different, distinctly different. They all have their own personalities. They have their own likes and dislikes, their own habits, their own, you know, extracurricular activity they like to do. And when they're moving in their normal mode of operation, those patterns are easily recognizable, right? I mean, I have one daughter who sings. I have another daughter who plays instruments. And I know distinctly when those activities slow down or increase that something's going on. And so it's really important to know who your kids' friends are, to know what your kids' habits are, so that when changes take place, that you observe them. Observe their eating habits, whether it increases or decreases. Observe the number of times that they start texting or receiving text messages. Observe the amount of hours they're spending on the internet or even secluded by themselves, withdrawn from the world. They've stopped talking to all their friends and no longer are going out or doing the normal activities they have. They don't no longer want to be involved in their extracurricular activities, or they start dressing differently. These are really warning signs. These are the ways that they want to have you recognize that something's wrong. But more importantly, I used to always ask my kids when they were growing up, I used to say, so did you have a good day? Did anything special happen? The lesson I learned was to ask both questions. With my last child, who's 10 years younger, I now ask her, is anything good happen at school? Did anything unexpected happen at school? Is there anything you want to talk about? Now, 9 times out of 10, she says, oh, Mom, you've been watching Dr. Phil too much, or Oprah, you know. Oh. But I tell her, you know what, it's my job. I want you to talk to me about the good and the bad. Because the one thing that we discovered when we were in counseling with my daughter, the one that was injured, she said when it was a good day, she didn't want to make it bad. And when it was a bad day, she didn't want to make it worse. She always wanted us to be proud of her. And because she had been attacked and raped, she was ashamed to tell us. Mm. We had never practiced talking about the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
We
and
didn't have practice in that.
They would try to hide those type of things from their parents.
Yes, and so she, every day she went on, but you know, she texted. She sent emails to Planned Parenthood, and she texted her friends about it. We didn't know this. She reached out to lots of people, but we had no clue this was happening. And the systems that were out there said she was too young to get any services, and she was too afraid to tell us. But had we had the technology to eavesdrop on what she was texting and what she was emailing, we would have known and been able to help her.
You know, and Dr. Bria, I'm gonna add this too, because I'm glad you said and shared your story, and thank you very much, because a lot of folks don't get it, particularly parents don't get it sometimes unless someone really tells them a story that is relatable, and to having a daughter, that's very relatable for me, and the thing that I want folks to really to understand too is not only did you say by any means necessary, but don't ever, ever be afraid to talk to your children. I know when I was growing up, I was fortunate enough to have a mother who said what she felt and felt what she said, but I always felt like I could talk to her and share things with her, and she sometimes would go off, sometimes she wouldn't. But never, I think a lot of parents need to understand, it is so important for you to be able to talk to your children. And be able to share. And our children look up to us, but I know I work with a lot of young people. I've spoken to hundreds of thousands of kids over my career, and every one of them has said the most important thing for them is to be able to have a line of open communication with their parents. And as parents, a lot of times we don't know that. And now we have the technology and the ability. You use the word eavesdropping. A lot of parents will go, well, I don't want to do that. I want to encourage any parent, do whatever, like you said, whatever it takes. Don't be afraid of doing it. Forget about their privacy, particularly if you're living in my house. You don't have any privacy.
Mm-hmm.
It's my house.
Mm-hmm.
So those things that I need to do to keep you safe, that's what I'm going to do. And I just want to, you know, applaud you and thank you once again for sharing your story, because I think that story tells a lot about what parents really need to understand. And some parents say, well, my child wouldn't this or my child wouldn't that, and they don't ever get it. And the truth of the matter is each one of our children may, and we have to always be prepared for that. So if we're prepared to love them with everything in us, we can possibly save their lives and save them from going through that kind of trauma. So I applaud you for sharing that story.
And, Tony, if I could just jump in for a second here and make a comment on that too, because we're gonna run out of time. But I absolutely 100% agree. And I also want to just add to that, when I was growing up, my mother, both my parents, but mainly my mother, went to the far other extreme in that not only did they eavesdrop, but they were like glued to my side. I couldn't move. I couldn't budge. I couldn't go to the bathroom without my mother watching. It's like she had a telescope down my throat. So you don't want to go to that extreme either, because that makes your child reluctant to come to you and reluctant to speak to you and reluctant to bring their issues and concerns to you, because they know they're going to be severely reprimanded or whatever the case. So it does need to be a good balance. I mean, you don't want to be too far to the left or too far to the right. You know, you don't want to traumatize your child by being right up on top of them every second of every day, 24/7. But you also don't want to be too far out of the loop where you're just, you know, not interested. Or like you said, Tony, I don't know how to do it, so I'm just not going to even try to learn technology. You want to be somewhere in the middle balance, so when there is a problem, your child will come to you.
You want to be fully present. Too many of us are focusing so much on doing our jobs or creating a new future for us or aspiring to some personal goal that we might have. But we have to be fully present in our children's lives. And, you know, it used to be it was okay if your kid was in the house with you, you knew your kid was safe. But I'm here to tell you that your kid can be sitting right next to you at the dinner table and being texted by a bully.
That's right.
You can have them sitting on the floor watching TV with you, and they could be watching pornography on their cell phone. Fully
mm-hmm.
present. What I'm saying, it's a different game. You know, we didn't grow up with computers. We didn't grow up with cell phones. We don't know all the ins and outs of the devices that we have right now. But we need to know. So if you say that I'm going to learn something 5 minutes each day, I would say learn more about what your child is doing with technology, so that they know that you're fully present and they know that you have a safeguard around them.
Now,
check
Dr. Brillery, let me just ask you real quick, so before we run out of time, this application or this product that you're talking about, the web safety,
mm-hmm.
I know it goes for texting on their cell phone, but does it also go for like the Twitter and MySpace? Because I know those are huge red flags too, and I have several nieces, and one in particular that's a freshman in college, and you know, she really concerns me. She lives on Facebook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So does this product work for the Twitter functionality and the Twitter piece and Facebook and all that too?
Absolutely. It interprets what's being typed in at the keyboard. And so you install it on as many devices as you need, whether it's, you know, their cell phone, their laptop computer, your home computer, however many devices they have access to. And then whatever's typed in there, it will send up flags if there are any potentially dangerous types of communication. You know, and once again, there's that grooming that goes on. You know, a 12-year-old should not be sending address, phone number, location to anyone on the Internet. they should be going through a parent if they're going to fill out any form or going to tell anyone on a chat room or on Facebook or MySpace or Twitter. So once again, you have to have something present so that no matter where they are, there's a guard on there. And it can be web safety or anything, but web safety is the only application out there to date that guards both places. And that's what's important. Most people have found, most schools have some safety software that help you prevent pornography or, keep you from going to certain sites. But they don't have this interpretation, this scanning software that understands what's being typed in and what it means. That's what's critical. But any parent who has a child that has a Facebook or a MySpace, you should go out there and visit those spaces. You'll be surprised what you'll find.
Absolutely. And Dr. Bria, I want to thank you so kindly for your presence this evening. Also, thank you ever so kindly for being a part of my joint venture team. And we look forward to having the end result of this is going to be so fabulous with all of the wonderful promotional free gifts and bonus items. And I am just really thrilled to have you and this web safety product. It sounds fabulous. And for all of our listeners who have not had a chance to listen to this entire segment, please go back and listen to the archive. This is absolutely critical information. If you are a parent or a grandparent or an aunt or an uncle or just have any teenager in your life that you care about, this is necessary information. So thank you, thank you, thank you for joining us this evening. And if you have a few parting words, just please go ahead and tell our audience. If you want to get in touch with Dr. Bria, you can go to my website, chollowayhill.com, and I have all of her contact information there as well as this web safety product.
Absolutely.
Parting words
is, in Africa we said it takes a village to raise a child. And until we all get involved and realize how critical this issue is, texting while driving is higher death rates than drunk driving by children. So until we all get involved and we all say enough is enough, this epidemic is going to get worse. So let's all reach out and touch one.
That's great. Thank you ever so kindly for your presence. And if you'd like to stay on and listen to our next half-hour segment, please feel free.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Dr. Bria. So we're going to move right on, and we're going to bring our next guest on the line. Jacqueline Wells is an author, speaker, and coach, and her book entitled The Fearless Factor is absolutely fabulous, and I'm going to bring her on and have her tell her story. Jacqueline, are you there?
Yes, I am, Kathy. Thank you.
How are you this evening?
Oh, I'm just great. We're getting blown away here in New York City. There's some very high winds, so other than that, life is good.
Oh, high winds, huh? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that typical for this time of year?
Well, they come and they go, but as long as there's no trees blowing in my direction, everything's cool.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Excellent. Well, why do I want to keep calling you doctor?
I don't know, but one of these days I might get my doctorate, so there you go.
Well, I'm sure
you're probably called Dr.
Close.
Bria on before is the confusion.
Right. Well, I know you could be close because your bio is extensive, so I know you have done so much work, and your book is fabulous. So tell our listeners a little bit about you and your accomplishments and things you've done and things you're working on now.
Well, it's a long story, so we'll cut to the chase here. I'm the author of several books. The two latest ones are called When the Crow Sings and the one that came out just recently called The Fearless Factor. I'm a motivational speaker, and I spend a great deal of my time talking to people about how to overcome the fears, the doubts, the self-esteem issues that occur in general, but in hold people back from really living their best life now. I'm also a singer. I've been a cantor at different synagogues in Paris and Amsterdam. I hold a black belt in karate that I got on my 49th birthday and didn't start training until I was in my mid-40s. What else have I been doing? I'm a global nomad. I've lived on 3 continents and 6 major cities. I have a home in Bali, which is one of my magical places on this earth. And I'm the mother of 5 children, the youngest of whom just started college. So I'm now for the first time an empty nester and enjoying it immensely. So now I'm free to pursue my career as I wish, and I have big plans for the Fearless Factor because I think the time is right for people to understand that fear is a choice and that we can use different strategies to move beyond it, and that's what I share in my book, The Fearless Factor. So there's the potted version.
Well, that sounds fabulous, and I don't know if you had an opportunity to listen to any of our previous segment, but our guest talked about the issues with parents trying to be tuned in to their teenagers and the texting situation and how they're being bullied and scared and you know, how that can turn into a traumatic, dangerous situation. So what you're just going to really fit in perfectly with that, being, you know, fearful of so many things, because fear is the most dangerous emotion, and I'm calling it an emotion because that is what it is. It's the most dangerous one that exists, and we get so caught up in fear that we do things that just, you know, are not healthy for us.
Well, here's what I say about fear, Kathy. It's imagination-based, and when you think about that, it's simply put, it's this. Whatever experiences we've had in the past are predicated on what will happen in the future. So we predicate the stuff on the past, we're looking forward to the future, and we're presuming that because bad stuff happened in the past, it's going to happen again in the future. We forget about right now, which is a whole different place altogether. So a lot of what goes on with our fears is that it's really down to five basic issues: loss, abandonment, rejection, humiliation, and failure. And on the other side of the failure coin is also the success coin, because there's as many people afraid of success as there are of failing. But the biggest issue for a lot of people is humiliation and rejection. These are two of the things that get in the way of us really stepping forward. And so what happens with this imagination at work here is that we're building the worst-case scenarios. And, of course, when we've got this cycle going on, it's very hard to break it until you really start to look at if it's true. Because, in fact, the only thing that we really do have to fear, if we fear it at all, is that we are going to be either physically harmed or we're going to lose our lives completely. And that, of course, can be very real, provided, you know, I mean, you could be in an airplane crash, or there could be something going on that would physically threaten you. But most of the time, it's a mind game. And so we have to shift our thinking in order to deal with fear. And I like to say fear is also one of the most powerful motivating forces that there is. Because when you think about it, when fear shows up in you, whatever shape or form it takes, that's like the clarion call to say, okay, what do I need to do differently here? And then be willing to do that. Because I like to say that being fearless is not the absence of fear, but the choices and the decisions we make when fear shows up in our lives. That's what makes the difference in being fearful or fearless. And as I say, there's no such thing as living without fear. We all have it. We all have self-doubts. We all have anxiety over new situations. But how you choose to deal with it, how you choose to show up to it, what kind of attitude you're going to have about it, that's what makes a big difference. And I did hear part of your previous call, and I agree with you. There's a lot of things that are very hard to control with kids and the Internet. And I've certainly, as I say, I've had 5 children, so I've seen my fair share of bits and pieces around this. And there's only so much control you can have. But, yeah, there can be a lot of anxiety about what are they getting exposed to. And, of course, there are measures one can take that Dr. Bria pointed out that, you know, one can really get engaged and find out what's happening. But, as I say, I feel for the most part that fear is imagination-driven, and we all have a choice in how we show up to it.
Now, I just wanted to add to that, Jacqueline, because I agree with everything you said. And some of the ways that I coach my clients, and, you know, you probably have used this same sentence before, but whenever they are just so caught up in fear, or they're not, even if they're even just a little bit fearful, I always tell them, what is the worst case scenario? Just go ahead and imagine the worst case scenario of whatever it is you're afraid of. What's the worst thing that can happen? Go ahead and imagine it, visualize it, and is it a controllable? Once you visualize and imagine that worst-case scenario, think of whatever it is you can do to prevent it. If there's nothing you can do to prevent it, then go ahead, be afraid of it, and then just walk through it and put the fear behind you. Because if you go ahead and just visualize the worst case scenario, then that will give you an opportunity to be released from the fear and move forward.
Yeah, I mean, again, since we are using the idea that fear is imagination-based, use your imagination to go to the absolute worst. What's going to happen? You know, you're going to lose your house, you're going to lose all your money, you're going to find yourself on the streets, you're going to be living under a freeway, put it that way. Is that really likely to happen? I do the same thing with my clients. Is it really likely to happen? And the bottom line is no, because you will find a solution that will get you out of it. It may not be ideal. It may not be the one that you would want to choose if you had other options. But the worst-case scenario, rarely, unless you just totally throw up your hands and give up, will never happen.
And it's an energy drainer. And that's the only way it will happen is if you allow that fear to put you in such a deep, dark emotional place that you do throw up your hands and give up. And that's, I mean, that has happened. People are so driven by fear that it takes them directly into what they don't want.
Absolutely. I mean, we know that you attract what you put out. And I like to use the phrase, what goes around comes around. So what do you want to come around? You know, this is the issue here. But is I know that they're very deep issues because part of the issue with fear is I like to say that it's inherited. It's something that happens from generation to generation. And I wrote about it in my book, When the Crow Sings, because I took three generations of women in my family having children born outside of marriage and looking at the effects that it had from generation to generation until one woman had the courage to give her child up for adoption. And that was my story. It's a semi-autobiographical novel. And I looked at the effect that fear had on all of these women who had been raped, who had been abused, who had willingly given themselves up in pursuit of loving the wrong people or looking for love in all the wrong places, and seeing how that scenario played out over each generation because similar messages were being given. See, one of the things that we don't recognize is that we inherit other people's fears. We inherit other people's anxieties. When your mother yells at you, no, and then gets really, really angry with you because you were about to step off the pavement, the child is looking at you going, what did I do wrong? Okay, so they're automatically making themselves the bad person because they're being screamed at because how could we possibly have, you know, stepped off the pavement, blah, blah, blah. But what you're dealing with is the mother's fear. The mother's fear is being transferred onto the child. Now, this is a very fundamental look at how we adapt and adopt other people's stuff. And I like to say to people, are you living in or creating your own story, or are you living in someone else's epic novel? Because this intergenerational stuff that spills over is absolutely shown, and you know yourself because you've done this, it's shown that it comes up again and again until somebody says, I want to change the pattern, because that's all it is. It's patterning. You know, and belief system falls under the same umbrellas. We assume beliefs that are not necessarily in line with who we are. We're not living from our values, from our authentic self. We're living according to the expectations and the opinions of other people. And a lot of our fears come out of that. We don't want to disappoint others. We don't want to go against the grain. And we squash a lot of our natural impulses as a result of that. And I see that in my coaching practice, and I know you see that in your coaching practice on a regular basis. And we're all about helping people to change those brainwaves, to change the ways of behavior and thinking that keep people wrapped up in the stuff, you know, which doesn't
and
help them.
And I wanted to say that, you know, the one thing that really gets me, Jacqueline, is this, and I'm glad you mentioned it because that's the one thing that I'm constantly sharing with people, and I'll see it, and I'll be talking to someone, and I'll say, well, how do you really feel about it? Well, I feel this way, and I felt this way since I was a kid. And I said, really? And I said, but you were too young to really have an impact on you like that as a child. Well, and then you'll get to the root. That behavior was a behavior that they adopted from their parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then now they're reacting the same way as their parent, and they don't know how to disengage that behavior because their parent still has that behavior and the parent isn't able to deal with it. And I'll share this with you. I did a parade this past weekend, And one of my colleagues has a fear of mascots. And so in a parade, of course, you have many mascots. So, and this person was a reporter on the street, and mascots were going by, and she couldn't interview or get close to them, or she would have, you know, major problems. Well, found out that her mother actually had a problem with mascots growing up as a child. Any kind of clown or anything like that, her mother had that problem, and her mother passed on that same fear. So she couldn't even realize until our conversation that that behavior was an inherited behavior. It was passed down to her. Her fear was because her mother had that same fear. And I told her, I said, the only way that you're going to be able to eliminate this is to face it. First of all, you have to understand where it came from and realize that it wasn't your fear. It was a fear that was given to you, and then go on and take it on. And that happens so often to so many people, whether it's thunderstorms. My mother or my father was afraid of those storms, and they reacted this way, and now I do the same thing. Parents have a tendency to pass those kinds of things on. How do we disengage with that fear, those inherited fears, those handed down behaviors? How do we start to eliminate those things?
Well, this is a very, very good question, and I think, I talk about the idea that we're really icebergs. You know, we have 90% of our consciousness is below the surface and 10% above it. And I found that in my own life, really having been challenged by many of the classical dysfunctional things of physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, drug addictions, alcohol addictions, children born outside of marriage. Trust me, I did the whole barrel full before I even got to the age of 20. What for me it was about was learning how to consciously notice when I was in that place that really wasn't about me. Growing up with violence, you can imagine that in my early days with my children, when I was frustrated, when I was angry, when I was pushed against the wall with whatever their behavior was, my impulse was to violence. And I had to hold myself back from that because it would have been so easy for me to just take my hand and slap them up the side of the head. I'm going to be totally transparent here. There were moments when I really got very, very close to it. And, in fact, I looked at that and I went, wait a minute, this is not how you want to be dealing with these kids. Because one of the things I got very early on in my transformation process was I'm a role model for these kids. I'm the one that is implanting this stuff on them. And I certainly screwed it up royally in the beginning. As I said, I had 5 kids. First one I gave up for adoption. The second one I left with his father at the age of 3. And when I got into having my 3rd child, which was several years later with the second husband, it was a major decision for me to show up to being a mother and stay with it regardless of what was going on, not to run away. So I made a decision that she would leave me before I left her, which was really fundamental in my change process. And I found myself at times in behavior with those kids that was not about me. It was about my mother's attitude or it was my father's attitude. And I had to concentrate on being aware that if I did jump into that impulse, I stepped back and was able to apologize to the kids, first of all, and then apologize to myself. Because one of the big things I talk about with dealing with our fears and our unconscious training, if you like, is we have to exhibit a great deal of compassion for ourselves and for the people that we are working with. The compassion and forgiveness element is huge, and it allows you to soften up and accept that there's a retraining going on here. And I literally resetting brain patterns, because that's exactly what we're talking about, is conditioning. How do you move out of the conditioning? And that's where most people, they're not prepared to show up to that consistency of paying attention. Pay attention. I say to my clients, keep a stack of index cards. And when you come up with the negative self-talk or the negative behavior, write it down. And then flip the card over and put the opposite on there. Put the positive reaction. Put in the positive behavior. And then start retraining your brain to think in that way. And it takes time. And I'm definitely testament to the fact that you can do it. But it's about getting conscious. And that might sound like a big generalization, but truly, it's a day-by-day process. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
when you say a day-by-day process, you know, that's a good analogy. That's a good way to put it, because I have clients, I have friends and colleagues who say that they are trying to overcome their fear, or they're trying to overcome their trauma or whatever they may experience in their childhood or adopted from their parents or whatever. But they say, you know, I'm trying to make progress, but I just can't get there. I just can't get there. How can I help those individuals? What can I say to them?
Well, I think the whole issue is people want instant gratification. We want it done now. You know, it's like, let's fix it. Let's move along. We've got to get it together. But when you're in the retraining process, you know yourself, it is simply increments, inch by inch. And you see it in your coaching practices, I do in mine, where they're making a great deal of progress, and the next week they show up and they go, well, I'm right back to square one again because... And I say, no, you're not back to square one again. What's happened is you've slid right back into the negative behavior that you wanted to change simply because you were tired. I mean, they tell you in AA, you're not supposed to get too tired, too stressed, and too hungry, because that's when the old patterns show up. And I certainly see that. When I'm really tired, I can definitely get pissed off. And I think to myself, this is not where I wanted to go. You know. So now that I'm aware of that, when I do give myself that, you know, when I do that backsliding stuff, I don't beat myself up so much. And what happens with our clients is they really are big on beating themselves up. And I like to say, you are your own worst enemy. Well, how about learning how to be your own best friend? Because you wouldn't talk to your best friend the way you talk to yourself. And so this, I think, is a lot of where that impatience comes in, that frustration of wanting results right now, but realizing it really is a process. And there are shortcuts if you know what it is you're looking for. Because I like to say to people, you already have all the answers. What you don't have is the questions. And that's what we as coaches do. We ask questions. We bring people into the here and now by getting them to look at what's going on at this very moment and then digging in with some questions that they can look at. So I feel that this whole process that we go through is simply, you know, it is time-consuming, but it doesn't have to take you, like me, 30 years to figure it out. I hopefully have found a few strategies in the Fearless Factor that will make some shortcuts, because, as I say, why take the long road when you can take the short road?
And I just want to give a very positive testimonial of my own experience. And Tony knows a little bit about me, and you can relate to this story, Tony, because I have shared this with you. My goodness, I brought so many fears into my adulthood from my mother, God rest her soul. She was a wonderful individual, but she had so many fears. And I even, one of the fears that I brought out of my childhood even went into a full-fledged phobia. And I have worked on each and every one of them, Jacqueline. Each and every one of them, because I didn't want to be that way. First, you have to make the decision and the choice that you don't want to be that way. It is your choice. It's not something you're stuck with just because, just like Tony said, you can change your beliefs. You have to decide that. And when I decided that, I worked feverishly. I worked day and night, and it was not an easy road. Like you said, so many things jumped in my head and those negative dark moments and all those things. And I would talk it over with a friend. Every time I would get those backsliding moments, I would talk it over with a friend, or I'd pray, or I'd meditate, or whatever I had to do. But I had to make the choice. I put my plan in place. What worked for me, it may not work for someone else.
Oh, absolutely.
But I am here to say the plan that I implemented did work. I not only eliminated my fear, and Tony, you can go ahead and give me my props, because I did, I also eliminated my phobia. And you know, it's harder to get rid of a phobia than a fear, but I got rid of all of them, the fears and the phobia.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. You know, you create a plan for yourself, and you start showing up. I mean, one of the hardest parts for so many people in the change process, as you know, is showing up to it, you know, not
right.
running away.
And the desire.
Able,
you got to want it.
You got to want it, absolutely. I mean, I call my coaching practice no BS coaching. And basically I'll say to people, if you're ready for this, come on in. If you're not ready for this, well, then don't, because you got to be ready for this change. And I'm absolutely very direct with all of my clients and with people in general, as you probably figured out, Kathy. And so, you know, I really do feel that that is the only way, in my opinion, to get through stuff. You know, show up to it. Be willing to trust yourself, because the thing about fear, as we know, is our understanding that we cannot handle things. We don't trust that we can handle whatever's going to come up for us in our lives. And when you learn to trust yourself, when you learn to trust the process, when you learn to trust that there are answers there, the answers are already there, that you can, in fact, meet those challenges and get to the other side feeling a whole lot better about who you are and how you function in the world, then it's just building from strength to strength. Because I know, like you, I went through some very heavy therapy, and at one point a friend looked at me and I was in the depth of despair, and she said, "Why do you need to do this?" And I said, "If I don't, I will kill myself. And if I don't, my children will kill themselves. And I'm not going there. So I have to do this work." And that was pretty dramatic. But at the same time, I felt very, very strongly that these incredible patterns that had been built in, and my mother had an extraordinary tragic life. She had children, two children before she married my mother. The first one died of heart disease, and the second one she was raped by her brother. And neither child did she want to have a relationship with. And then when she got pregnant for the third time with my father, he said, "I'm going to kill myself unless you get rid of it." So she tried to give herself an abortion until she was 5 months pregnant, and the child was born severely retarded. That's what I inherited as a woman. This leaves its mark on you. And so, therefore, you have to work hard at removing the garbage. I like to say, take out the garbage because it's stinking up your house. And that's the truth.
That's powerful.
Love it. I absolutely love it. And for everyone out there listening, Jacqueline, I'm just loving your testimonials here, because I want people to understand that we, myself, Jacqueline, Tony, Dr. Bria, and everyone who has been on my show since I started, yes, we're motivational speakers. Yes, we're inspirational people. Yes, we are here to lift you up and help you in your journey. But we're human, and we have the same trials and tribulations that everyone else out there has. But the only difference with us is that we have learned how to use the tools that are within us, because all the tools that you need to change your life, reform your life, transform your life, are inside of you. They're all right there. All that strength is right inside you, and all you have to do is pull it out, and you can overcome any fears. I mean, my fears and phobia was so severe and traumatic. I mean, it totally changed my life until I said, no more of this. I'm going to be in control of my life, not these fears and this phobia.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll go with that one, because that's truly where we're all coming from. Because I like to say to people, I'm not that different from you. The only difference is that I made a commitment to show up to the stuff that needed to be changed, that wasn't about who I am, that was about other people's stuff. And obviously my father was a raging alcoholic, so, you know, I had all of that stuff to deal with as well. I was in AA for 5 years. I realized that at the end of 5 years, it wasn't about my drinking. It was about my thinking. And when I was able to change the thinking, the alcohol didn't become, it was no longer an issue. I quite happily can drink now without beating myself up for having a drink, which I couldn't do in the early days, because it was either all or nothing. You know, we tend to be extremists when we're dysfunctional to that extent. So, you know, again, lots of stories that we share, but my stories are not that different, as you say, Kathy, from the person who's listening to this call.
And I like that. I like that, because I want our listeners to be able to connect with us. I want them to know we're human, you know, and we're not super people. We're not super individuals. We're human. We have flesh. We live in the flesh. We walk day to day just like they do. But it's the thinking, the mindset, the thought process.
Yeah,
I was just going to say the one thing I want to add, if anything, the listeners need to know, is that anything that you go through can make you stronger. The truth is, you just have to understand that strength comes from experience, and it comes from the things you go through. Don't let it defeat you. Let it grow you.
I'm glad you brought that up. I had a program that I called "The Road to a Powerful Future is a Rocky Past." And I love it, you know, because when you really think about that, the road to a powerful future is the rocky path, because it takes an enormous amount of strength to keep moving forward and then get beyond all the garbage that's come your way and realizing it's not your garbage.
Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And for any listeners that want Jacqueline's contact information, it's on my website. Jacqueline is in our team, our joint venture team, and she's going to be offering a free gift at the end of this 12-week session. So we are so excited. Both of our guests were fabulous this evening. Thank you guys so much for joining us. And we're running out of time, so we're going to sign off for now. I'm Kathy Holloway-Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And I'm Jacqueline Wales. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Thank you, Jacqueline. And we will see you guys next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night.